Thanks, Ray. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. And it goes without saying that we're all reeling and grieving after the events of the weekend, the tragic events of the weekend. And I suppose nothing anybody can say can provide consolation or succour for the families, friends and neighbours concerned. Last week, we had Mary Shine Thompson in, and Mary edited a book called Poems for When You Can't Find the Words. And I was just thinking over the weekend that this is one of those occasions for a lot of us. Just, it's beyond words, isn't it? It's hard to comprehend what has happened. And I went through the book again, looking for something that might make sense of all this or be consolation where there's no consolation to be found. And I ended up back with Brendan Kennelly's poem Begin. And we played Brendan reading that on the Late Late Show from 25 years ago when Mary Shine Thompson was in with us last week. And it's about, I suppose, life and the circle of life and how things continue. And I'll just read the last four lines from it. Though we live in a world that dreams of ending, that always seems about to give in, something that will not acknowledge conclusion insists that we forever begin. And that's not really consolation for the people involved, but it might make sense at some stage in the future. I'll talk to you in a moment about things, general things. And we've Brian Murray on today, himself and Una, his partner, coming in to talk to us. Brian went public on the fact that he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in the RT Guide. And then he was on last night and Keys to My Life. And he's coming in to talk to us about that 3 years after the diagnosis today. And Connor Pope, because it's a Monday, will be in. So if you have any consumer issues, please get them into us. We're talking about the big bad octopuses because they're now been named as an invasive species in this country. And we'll be talking to Kevin Flannery about that and lots more besides. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Who said over the weekend that music is the best medicine? I think it's Luke, was it? Luke O'Neill? Yeah, Luke O'Neill. Yeah. Ludovico in Audi on RT Radio 1. 51551 ray@rte.ie. There's a joyous tweet doing the rounds, and it's from Kelly Harrington. It's a picture of her standing in her hallway, I presume it's her hallway, and in her hand is the hard copy of her book. And with it, she writes, "Got my hands on a hardback copy of my book, Kelly Harrington with Roddy Doyle. It was a roller coaster of emotion sitting down with Roddy and talking about everything from past to present. I genuinely could not have chosen a better person to write my story than Roddy." Thanks to Roddy. And that's out at the end of October. And what an amazing thing for her to have that in her hand, our Olympic gold medalist. And right from the first time I met Kelly Harrington, I knew there was something very, very special about her. So grounded and so talented and so disciplined and so hardworking and so loyal and all of those things. And I'm really looking forward to reading that Kelly Harrington, the biography, which is in shops at the end of October. Oh, yes, we're coming into that time of the year, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Books aplenty. I remember, is it 70% or something about, I think it's about 70% or could be 80% of books published are published between now and the end of November. This is the time. So there'll be biographies, there'll be memoirs, there'll be autobiographies, there'll be cookbooks, there'll be music books, there'll be all sorts of things. Which it's an exciting time. It's an exciting time for us here because we have the pick of it all, you know. So anyway, congratulations to Kelly. On books, Clodagh was on. She says, "I was just wondering if there are any plans to invite short stories from listeners again. Any plans for A Page From My Life, Volume 2? Kind regards, Clodagh." You're not the first person to ask that question, Clodagh, and you won't be the last. And it's something we've toyed with and considered. And oftentimes when the topic comes up, we say, well, that was the product of lockdown. We asked you to write sort of 500 words on sort of an extract from an imaginary biography or autobiography, and we got thousands and thousands of entries, and we put 150 of them in a book, and we sold it, and we raised 100,000 for Laura Lynn, and it was a huge success. Next year could be the year, Clodagh. I'm not saying anything now. I'm not saying anything, but next year could be the year. We've given it a bit of a rest, and next year we might revisit it, because it was hugely popular, and the standard of writing was second to none, and a number of people who got their little stories, their 500 words, published in A Page From My Life, have gone on to write books. And that might be a nice panel to hear from them, three or four of them in studio, to tell us about their success since A Page From My Life. Barack Obama, this isn't really about books, it's about voiceovering. The former US president has won an Emmy as best narrator for his Netflix documentary series, Our Great National Parks. He beat off competition from people like David Attenborough. So he's won an Emmy, a Grammy, I think, and he hasn't won an Oscar yet. But anyway, let's have a listen to the award-winning narration by former President of America, Barack Obama.
This sloth has an entire micro-kingdom living in his fur. Researching him will help fight cancer, malaria, and antibiotic-resistant superbugs. This sleepy sloth might just save us all.
Sounds good, but I wonder, did he get it just because he was the former president of the United States of America? And that must really annoy people who've been doing it, and that's their life's work. Now, I know there's not more to David Attenborough than in voiceovers on wildlife documentaries. He's an activist and lots more besides. But it is something he does and does brilliantly. And then Barack Obama rocks along, new kid in town, and gets the Emmy. That must be a little bit annoying. Just there, news just in. The Flaz back in Mullingar next year. Thanks for the invitation, lads. We'd be delighted to go back. Oh, you didn't invite us. No, we'd be delighted to go back next year. We had a great time there the Tuesday after the bank holiday in August, and I'm looking forward to it already. They welcomed an estimated 500,000 visitors over the week. And of course, as you would have known if you listened to any of the commentary around the Mullingar Fla, that's where it all started. Coldest Cole Tory Aaron started the Fla in Mullingar. Would have been 51 years ago, wasn't it? It was supposed to be last year, the year before, and then it was postponed because of COVID. But it's back next year because they did so well. Now, reeling in the ears, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on clips they'll hear in their ears, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. It's for the Crow Park Hotel. They're giving one lucky listener, the gift of a luxurious two-night stay with an elevated dining experience in the Hawthorne Restaurant. Following a complete refurbishment of its ground floor, the Crow Park Hotel, part of the Doyle Collection Hotel Group, now has a luxurious new lobby bar, restaurant and terrace in the heart of Dublin City for you and a guest to enjoy with breakfast and dinner included. The modern and atmospheric Hawthorne Restaurant provides an elevated dining experience in a relaxed yet glamorous setting that champions local produce. So there you go. You can find out more. doylecollection.com/hotels/the Crow Park Hotel. So 2-night stay there, which is lovely. Looking for two people on after 4 o'clock. Here's your qualifying question. Who has just been named as the next British Prime Minister? 0818715925. That's 0818715925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're joined in studio by Brian Murray and Una Crawford O'Brien, one of Fair City's most loved couples. Of course, they play Bob and Renee, respectively. That makes sense, doesn't it? They're here in studio because, as you'll know, if you were reading the newspapers or the RTE Guide or watching the telly last night, that Brian went public with his Alzheimer's diagnosis. He got diagnosed 3 years ago. He's now 73. And he's here to talk about that, and Una's here as well. Both of you are very welcome. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
I was watching Keys to My Life last night, and it went through in detail Brian Murray's extensive career. You had, like, Strumpet City, the Irish RM, Bread, Brookside. Yeah. The list goes on and on and on.
It goes on. It does a bit.
Yeah.
It's a bit embarrassing sometimes, you know.
No, it's amazing. And you started acting when you were 21.
I did. I signed my contract to be a member of the Abbey Theatre Company on my 21st birthday.
Right. Which means I'll do the maths on it for you, Brian.
You've been
working as an actor for 52 years.
Oh, there you go. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. No, I'll move the microphone. There you go.
Well, yeah.
Isn't that an amazing time? It is.
Well, coming out of the working class background and wanting to become an actor was kind of like a bit of a puzzle. Like my mother said, well, we know that you want to do that, but we don't know how to help you, you know.
Yeah.
And my father worked in the railways. And just determination. Go ahead and make sure that you can get where you want to go.
You started as an electrician.
Yes.
We saw that last night.
Yeah.
And we also saw last night that you were born into the tenements, and then when you were a teenager, you moved into a posh house.
That's right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
And with an upstairs. Mm. And you had no role models in your community for acting.
No. That's it. Even the notion of knowing an actor was kind of like, you're having a laugh.
Yeah.
You know?
And did they think back then, Brian, that you had notions above your station? You know,
definitely. But the real interesting thing about it all, actually, as it turns out, and that was that I went off to become an electrician.
Yes.
So I was working with an electrician as his mate, and his name is Paddy Brennan. And I told him that I really wanted to become an actor. I said, I'd be happy to be an electrician, but I really want to be an actor. So that we left that, and that was fine. And I was out doing a job in Cabra as an electrician. And about some months later, and an electrician came into where we were, and he said, Paddy Brennan wants to give you a piece of information that the Abbey are doing something or other in. What was the
Mater
name of
Day
the
community
it, 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 it was the Mater Dei Community Centre, and he said that they're talking about anybody who would be interested in being involved in the theatre. And Paddy Brennan said that, you know, Brian Murray should go up to the Mater Dei Community Centre and see what
and
he can get
from
it.
And that's where it started. So through the electrician, into acting.
Exactly.
An odd circuitous route, but it's worked out for you. But
can I say he can't change a light bulb?
It's not that he can't, he just doesn't want to.
Well, that must have been a delight for you last night, Una, seeing all of those clips.
I actually got very emotional,
yeah,
you know, watching it. And it was great. And I think that's why with the Alzheimer's, to see that whole big body of work there, and that like the worst thing he can lose is his memory, really.
Yeah.
You know, that for learning the lines.
And what about, we'll get on to all of that, but what about the chats around going public with it? How did they go at home between the two of you?
Easy.
Right.
That was the easy one, really.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part of it was Brian accepting it in a way. That took a while. But once he acknowledged it, once he faced it, that was the easy part because, well, Brian is a performer as well as everything else. So he felt that if he could come out and talk to people and tell them about his journey and show them that it's not the end of the line, that he can... and that's why he decided he wanted to do it. And he spoke to the Alzheimer's Society, and that's how it happened.
And you suspected that there was something wrong before you went?
I did. Yeah. Yes, I did. And it came out as an actor because, you know, up until all this happened, I was able to kind of like take a three-page scene and just go through it in 15 minutes and I'd know every single line.
And you were known in the business.
And it was, I just sucked up the stuff. Yeah. And then suddenly it started to kind of go down and then it disappeared.
Mm.
And I was aware that this is my brain or my memory is there's something wrong with it now.
And at the beginning, I'm wondering, did you just put it down to getting a bit old?
I did put it down to getting a bit old, and I didn't really have a word for it. Alzheimer's wasn't a big thing that it is now, and all that. So, you know, eventually we found our way and discovered that that's what it is.
Yeah.
We were doing a play, and I just noticed that he was having great difficulty learning the lines, which was just not him. And that was in the January of 2019, was it? It's 3 years ago, anyway.
Three and a half.
And we got through the play.
Yeah.
And a wonderful play by Deirdre Kinahan, Halcyon Days. And I suggested to him then one day on a beach in the middle of Kerry, and there was nobody else on it, that maybe he would go see about it. And he accepted that immediately.
And Brian, we've spoken on numerous occasions before. It's always been about a play or a TV show or Fair City or whatever. A thing that I don't know about you, you know, what sort of person are you when it comes to that sort of thing? Would you now, once you heard the word Alzheimer's, would you have gone after it and investigated it online, or what's your approach?
I would have gone in exactly to do that. And find out what it is.
Yeah.
How do you get rid of it, and how bad is it? So you, just to do everything that you could do. But the thing that broke my heart was the fact that I always regarded myself as an actor, and I always regarded myself as capable of learning it fast.
Yes.
And I knew it was going. Oh, yeah. I knew it was going.
That was one of your trademarks.
Yeah.
Along with the good looks and the charm. And
charming, I'm charming.
Well, you are charming. You are charming. Of course, one of the things you said there was, you know, how do you get rid of it? But this is the thing, you don't.
You don't.
It's incurable.
No,
yeah.
No, it's incurable. And you know, it's pretty heartbreaking, really. But we never died of winter yet, and we just keep going forward.
The denial thing, that's completely understandable, isn't it? That you would rail against it, and hope that they got it wrong. I suppose that's the thing.
And it's a huge thing to take on, because when you hear the word Alzheimer's, and you know, as somebody explained to us, it's like an umbrella, the dementia.
Yeah.
And the spokes underneath are all the various types of dementia. And Alzheimer's is just one of many.
It's the biggest one.
Yeah.
I think it's something like 80% of people with dementia have Alzheimer's.
Yes. So like, it did take Brian a good while to process it.
Yeah.
And he put it down to age a lot.
Right. The other thing is, and I don't know if this happened with you, Brian, is that, and I would imagine it did because you're such a brilliant actor, that people develop little strategies to disguise the fact.
Yes. Sometimes being an actor is very well worthwhile.
So you had little things you used, little devices, little strategies.
Little devices, and it has to be said as well that in RTE, in Fair City, with Bridgie
de Courcy, the executive producer. Yeah,
I mean, it was just fantastic, the support that has been given to me. Do you know what I mean?
And when did you have to tell them?
How long ago was it since I told them?
In a way, it was a gradual thing.
Was it? Yes.
There was no big announcement as such. They began to realise themselves there was a problem.
Yeah.
And that was really how it came about.
Yeah.
But you see, they've been brilliant. They've facilitated.
Oh, they've been fantastic. Yes. Absolutely.
Really
I mean,
amazing.
Everyone from the other actors to the directors, all the crew, the staging. I mean, staging are brilliant. They produce things for them to hide the script under, and there's always something. You know? And you see,
it's been fantastic.
They wouldn't have known it. A lot of them wouldn't really have acknowledged it as such, because if Brian can't remember something, he'll very often make it up. He's an actor. Can't remember the next lines. Make them up.
Yeah. What day is today? Saturday.
Yeah. But just on the day, because I believe you have whiteboards. You have a whiteboard in your bedroom, for example.
Yes.
So my name was on that this morning.
Yes. See,
right.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
It's still there. It'll be wiped
out
when we go home.
Okay.
Yes.
Ceremoniously wiped out.
Exactly.
So that tells you what's coming for the day.
But this is the menu for the day.
And that's what he sees first thing in the morning.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And that jolts you into the now, doesn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
And also we have a great clock, which is about the size of a reader. And it tells you the day, the date, the time, the month.
Okay.
And they're the first two things he sees in the morning.
Yeah. Mm. So you know where you are and what you're up to.
So in your research then, what did you find out? Because I suppose people who haven't had first-hand experience of dementia and Alzheimer's just believe it to be a problem with your memory, that it progressively gets worse until such time as you don't recognise the people around you, and you don't know who you are. But that's the cliche. That's the ultimate thing. But you would have done a little bit more research.
Yeah.
So it's not about all memory, is it?
I don't know the answer.
You don't know
to
the
that,
answer,
is
right?
Just okay. The honest truth.
Yeah.
It hasn't.
But do you remember doing Strumpet City now, for example?
Oh, God, yes.
Yes,
oh,
okay.
Yes.
Well, there's nothing wrong with this long term.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't get them started.
You still remember Paddy Brennan's name, the electrician.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was 52 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then this is where it gets difficult. Yeah. You don't mind if I ask you.
No,
say,
not
about,
at all.
About yesterday.
Yeah.
Do you remember watching Keys to My Life now?
I did watch it, but I didn't see it, did I?
You did, Lovie.
We
actually saw it twice last night. I know we shouldn't be saying we saw it twice. We watched it the first time with one eye open and one eye closed. And then we watched it again, kind of critically.
Yeah.
And you didn't remember that you had seen it this morning.
Right.
So you actually watched it this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that feel hearing that now?
It doesn't come as a surprise.
No.
Do
okay.
you know?
You've accepted it.
Well, yes. You know, I'm looking forward to getting some kind of a medical thing that will actually relieve it or a little...
Ease the symptoms.
Yeah, a little bit. And from chatting to various people, I think that there are a whole lot of people out there as well who are waiting for that to happen as well.
Yes,
so we just have to, you know, keep our fingers crossed.
They're doing a lot of work on dementia and Alzheimer's
because
we're an ageing population and they reckon that globally the number of people with the condition will double. In the next 25 years.
It has a benefit, though, the memory, because Brian gets excited, as you can see, about things. And if we go someplace and we might have been before, it's like a new place and he's delighted with it. So it does have positive things, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, everything has a positive side to it, I suppose.
Yeah, and I suppose the positive side of going public for you is now people know.
Yes.
So were ye, in a way... Let's park Fair City, but for other people, you were sort of living a bit of a mini sort of white lie, were you?
I mean, friends and family knew.
Knew, yeah.
And but otherwise, we would never have kind of come out and said it. There was no need to say it, and it has made life easier for me.
Mm. And you were very much living with it. That's the brilliant thing.
Yeah.
We spoke to this amazing lady, and I bought her book for you, Wendy Mitchell. And she wrote a memoir, and she's also wrote a book. And this is the book which I bought for you today. I haven't got to take the price off. What I Wish People Knew About Dementia. And she is an amazing thing. And she is very fussy about the language around dementia and Alzheimer's. And it, you know, living with. That's you're living with it. And you're doing a really good job of living with it.
Yes.
And you've a very positive attitude about it.
Yeah, well, yes. I think it's the only way forward, really.
Yeah. And Una, you, like, talk to me about your feelings, because how did you feel? How long have you been together?
15 years, 16 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're very much a couple. You know, no, anytime, I know that sounds a bit like a truism, but anytime you come in, you're lovely together.
We're actors. I know we get on that.
He's gone red now. He doesn't get it.
No, we do.
Does he blush that easily always?
No.
That's sort of charming, isn't it?
It is kind of.
That's sweet,
It was a shock. It was an awful shock when I first started. My mother had Alzheimer's and my grandmother had dementia. And it was a terrible shock. I was rehearsing a play at the time and it was probably the best thing I could do because I had to get in and go rehearsing. But as time went on, I realised that it wasn't the end at all. As Brian said, it's not the end. It's just a different life. And slowly we've acclimatised ourselves to it. I would have to say sometimes I find it extremely stressful. But I think now that it's out in the open, it will make it that much easier for me.
Mm.
I think so.
And you've had help from the Irish Alzheimer's Society.
They've been fantastic. We also have had fantastic, through St. James's Hospital, he was put in touch with this project or programme called Living Well with Dementia, the Live Dem course, and this fantastic lady, Adele,
yeah,
She, in a way, she was dealing with Brian and other people of the same kind of with dementia. And she also had a group for the supporters like me. And she, it's an awful thing to say, but she's one of the first people who really listened to us. Because you go to the hospitals, the doctors will probably hate me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. And they will talk to the person with dementia. And they will, it seems, believe everything that they say. Hmm. And we, the people who are living with them,
yes.
know yeah. that that's not always the way it works.
Yeah.
And Adele listened to us. And that was fantastic as well.
But you can understand completely how Brian would try and cover up.
Oh, completely.
Isn't it completely? It's human nature.
Of course.
Yeah. And so, when you, what's the advice on when Brian sees the world differently than it actually is? What's the advice? Do you go along with it? Do you?
Sometimes I do, and sometimes I
most time you do,
and sometimes I'll pull him up. But I mean, not very often, unless it's something glaringly, you know, wrong.
Yeah,
it's fine. Mm. It's grand, and if it's not hurting anybody, that's fine too.
That's fine too. Yeah, it's a gradual thing, Brian. Can you sense the changes and the drift?
I think I could sense the changes. Yeah. I wouldn't be guaranteed that I'm correct 100%, but a lot of the time, you know, you can you're watching yourself. You step outside of yourself to look back at yourself and see what can we do here now.
Mm. This lady, Wendy Mitchell, she describes in this book how she has a memory room in her house, and it's full of photographs. She goes up there and it's a lovely thing.
Yeah.
You have the advantage of having this, not just photographs, but all these videos.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be lovely if the people at Keys, they've probably done it already, the Keys to My Life, did a compilation of all those clips from Strumpet City and Bread and all those.
Gosh, yeah.
That's
wouldn't
a great
it be lovely?
Idea.
A great idea. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Okay, Brendan Courtney, did you hear that?
What are you most...
it's a very good idea.
What are you most proud of, Brian?
What am I most proud of?
In your work. 52
gosh,
years.
That's a great question. Great question. What am I most proud of?
Brookside, you know, that was...
Brookside was pretty big, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it was massive.
And you, I suppose, you were sort of, in other roles, you were sort of the charming sort of bit of a likeable rogue.
Yeah,
but in that, you were
an
evil.
Nothing charming about this man.
No.
But as I said to people before, around now, talking about Brookside, and that it was a real learning curve, you know, and it was tough doing all that, you know, so-called beating up of Sandra.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it was hard going, you know.
And it was at a time when there was no public conversation about domestic abuse.
Domestic violence or domestic abuse. No, it hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
And I had to get an escort in to go into the studio on the second day because they got a call from a woman. They got a call from a person to say that their wife was doing well with her lack of memory until what happened.
Oh, I see.
No, she had been abused in a former relationship.
That's what it was, yeah.
And it triggered
And it re-triggered it again.
Yes, yes.
And the husband said, if I ever see that lad, I'm going to break his neck.
That's you,
Yeah. So we had to have the police escort, you know what I mean?
So I said in the promo that you wanted to share your story to help others.
Yeah. Well, that's primarily, you know, it. I mean, it's not exactly a walk in the park. Do you know what I mean? But it's worth kind of putting it out. It's not the end of the world yet.
No.
Do you know
you're
what
living
mean?
With it, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, because it's worldwide, I would imagine there will be some kind of a panacea for it or some kind of a tablet.
And you're hoping that's going to happen.
And it mightn't be in my time. Mm. It might be beyond my time. But it will happen. And I hope it happens sooner rather than later.
Yes.
But having somebody like Una Crawford O'Brien, you know what I mean, in the house and all the rest of it, you couldn't do it without her, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? She's fantastic at support and all that kind of stuff. So, but you know, I'm still optimistic that, you know, there'll be some kind of a response to all of it. Yeah.
Well, we have a great time. Like, we have a great time. We go out where we're just back from Munich.
Yes.
You know, he goes out walking every day. We have Bob, our dog.
Yes, yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, we had a great time in Munich. It was fantastic. Loved it.
And where's the fuzzy bit? Where's the, you know, so last night's it's non-existent, really.
Yeah.
So say this time last year, would you have any, no?
Bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And today, for example, I see you have a script there.
Yeah.
So you did a reading today.
Yes.
Don't read any of it because breaching the course, you'll be on me. On me back. Giving away storylines.
Yeah.
So you're in a situation now where, without giving too much away, that you're depending on help, aid to. For the script,
for the script, yes. But thank goodness the help has come forward, and as I said earlier on, they're extremely great at kind of doing all they can for me.
And the acting is intuitive at this stage, is it?
It is, really. Yeah, yeah. Acting is the easy bit. It's remembering the bleeding lines.
Don't be cursing on the radio.
The worst.
You see, I mean, in June this year, he read Out at the Tower.
Yes, I saw that last night, yeah.
Mm. So like,
for Bloomsday.
Yes.
Yeah. He read a piece from Ulysses,
And Deirdre Kinahan is writing a play for him. When she heard why he had to drop out of it, because we were doing it again this year, which was to happen during the pandemic.
Of course, theatre would have bigger challenges. Yeah. Yeah.
So Brian dropped out of it and Barry McGovern took over from him. And when Deirdre heard why, she immediately said, I'm going to write a play for him.
Right.
And I'm kind of going, how can you write a play for him? But it's that he will read it. And there will be a young man playing him as a younger actor. It's a play about an actor who has got dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And he has written these letters, basically. That's what it is, about his earlier life. And then the younger man enacts it. And
so he writes letters to himself.
More or less, kind of. That's it.
Yeah.
Before he had the dementia.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Or when
he
knew he was getting it.
You probably come across this lady, Cathy Ryan. We've had her in a good few times. I see she's on the website there for the Alzheimer's Society. And she was diagnosed with early onset dementia or Alzheimer's. And she was in here and she wrote a letter to her sons.
Yeah.
You know, like it was, So this letter would be there for all time. Her as completely, you know, knowing what was going on. And
then that's a lovely thing.
Yeah. Yeah. How have your children reacted, Brian?
They live in the UK, for starters.
Except Laura,
yes. They're aware of it and I keep them. I bring them up to date whenever I can with how it's going or if it's not going, you know?
Yeah.
And they're upset about it, but they're optimistic, I think, you know. Or maybe it's wishful thinking, I don't know. But no, they're in the loop and they're kept informed.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think they realise how bad it can be because they don't see him on a day-to-day basis. And when they do see it, it could be just for a couple of days and it's all, yay, where do we go now and what do we do now? And, you know, so, and even on the phone and that, it's different.
And are ye, this is a difficult question to ask now, but are ye as a couple banking memories? Do you know what I mean? Are you having conversations about what the future might hold or not?
Not. I try to live in the present, in the day, because, you know, I'm afraid sometimes to think of the future. But I'm a great one for taking photographs, am I?
Yes,
we have loads of photographs.
Selfies?
No, selfies.
No,
we don't do selfies.
Well, you're not in any photographs then, ain't I?
More or less. But so I suppose I record everything in that respect. Mm-hmm. And
I was looking for my phone there to take a picture of Tui. Where did I put it? Oh, here it is. Now, here you go. I'm going to take a picture of Tui live on the radio.
Live on the radio.
Yeah, right. Now, There we go. I just string it in there. That's a lovely picture. Oh, that's video. Sorry, hold on. Now,
that's even worse.
Now, hold on. Here we go. Now, there you go. That's it. And there, and there. Right, I'll send that to you. There you go. So, are people approaching you? Have you got a reaction? Because it was the RT Guide last week, wasn't it? The week before?
Last week.
Yeah, last week. And you were in all the papers, mm-hmm. Brian. And I suppose people will get in touch with you to share their stories, will they, Una? What do you think? Or have they? Or
not as yet.
No.
Up to now, it's just been the positivity around, mm-hmm. hasn't
yes.
it?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Everybody who read it, you know, they're delighted to read it, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you've come forward and you're saying these things. And some of the people that we do know that have Alzheimer's or dementia, they're delighted that he has come out and
yes.
said it as well.
Yeah.
Because it is all around us.
Yes.
And just raising the awareness mm-hmm. and seeing that people, like Brian is still doing the job that he did 52 mm-hmm. years later. So...
Amazing.
It might be a bit slower, but he's still doing it. Yeah. And so therefore, if he can do it, they can get out and...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, just let's, you know, keep our fingers crossed and look forward to having, you know, a panacea and having some tablet or whatever
yeah.
to at least ease it up.
Ease it up.
Yeah.
Absolutely love Brian in Bread when he played Shifty. And you met the Queen as a result of that.
I did. I was in the palace twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's still flying
the throne.
Yeah. Had the great pleasure of meeting both Brian and Una after Halcyon Days at the Viking Theatre in Clontarf. A lovely couple. Wishing Brian all the very best, as Siobhan and Ralph Arnhem. I'm a bit worried about my dad. His memory is not what it used to be. And I've noticed that we would have a conversation about something and he would repeat it half an hour later as if it was for the first time. He's not the kind of person to talk about his health. I'd be very interested to hear how Una first approached Brian about getting checked. Because for me, finding the words for this conversation are difficult.
Well, as I say, I noticed it during the play and it took me about 3 months to gather my courage together. And the beach in Kerry was the right place to do it. And I was very, very wary of saying it because I didn't want to make him angry. I didn't want to upset him either by saying, I've noticed your memory isn't the best. So I kind of tiptoed around it. But I think you have to kind of say it as gently as possible. But say it.
Yeah.
I think that's,
is there a possibility that...
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you noticed it yourself?
Yes. Yes. Questions are always softer, aren't they, than statements?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you find the words eventually. Sitting here listening to Brian and Una, my darling mum had dementia. Mam it is here, because people are fussy about what they call their mothers. My darling mam had dementia and we laughed and cried our way through it. Hopefully laughed more. To us, it was another chapter we explored together. Not the end, just a change. I saw Brian and Una once leaving a soap awards and they could be heard laughing as they dodged the traffic. Hope they always have that lovely fun, love and hugs to them both, says Susan.
So yeah, that's lovely.
Thank you, Susan.
Yeah, a lot of middle-aged people listening whose memory is not as good as it used to be, please ask Brian when it went beyond not finding the car keys or the phone.
Yeah. Well, it car keys and the phone are very good. Absolutely. Where are my keys?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we have a hook now that I put them on and I know where they are most all of the time.
I suppose what they're asking, and you had a measure of it that most people wouldn't have the scripts.
Yes.
It was like nearly you were running an experiment every day.
Yes.
They said we caught it very, very early.
Yes, you see. Yes, yeah. Because of what you do.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. Somebody else, it wouldn't have been as obvious.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it was depending, you know, as an actor, you're depending on learning your scripts and learning your lines and having no problems about it.
Yeah. I worked on Fair City as an extra and Brian and Una are always very nice, says Tommy.
Well, that's good. Thanks,
yeah.
Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
So there's your book.
Fantastic.
I wish you both,
thank you
love
so much.
And hugs. And as I say, you are a lovely couple and keep that going because there will be stormy waters ahead. And,
yes.
And you know that.
Yep.
But one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Yeah. And there's a quote, I don't want to misquote it, but there is a quote from one person who suffers with dementia in that book. And it is about something to the effect of we don't have to worry about the future. That's one of the pluses. That you're living in the now all the time.
All the time.
Brian is very chilled.
Yeah.
Most of the time he's extremely chilled.
But that's your nature, isn't it? You were always...
Kind of, yeah.
Did you ever get nervous about big auditions or big shows or...
No, not really. Love first nights.
Yeah, you know, love them.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's a bit, oh, but it's kind of like, yeah.
But you're always still a bit, you were always still a bit. Bit.
You're always kind of, you'll always, you, well, I don't know if everyone does this. If you, you'll all, I'll bring up the good parts and then I'll say, well, that, but then I don't know that second act. Do you know?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So you'll answer that for yourself. We'll handle that one.
We'll handle that one. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, nerves and excitement are, makes the body feel the same way. It's just yes. better labelling them. So you labelled it excitement, other people would label it nerves.
Yeah, nervous. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I forgot to mention is you're always so dapper and so smartly dressed. Is that what first attracted you to Brian Murray? Is he? He's always, is he?
No. What, no. He made me laugh. He's not very well dressed today,
yeah,
mind
but
you.
I think that is in a casual way. He has a linen work top, as it's called.
Yeah, but it's summer.
That's he looks perfectly fine to me.
No, he made me laugh.
He made you laugh.
He made me laugh.
And he still makes you laugh.
He still makes me laugh.
Yeah, right. Una, thanks for coming in. Brian,
thanks,
mind yourself.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ray. Thanks
very much, Brian.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And lovely text coming in for Brian and Una there. The numbers of octopuses off the coast of Ireland are increasing, according to my next guest. You might remember we talked about the Oscar-winning documentary about octopuses, My Octopus Teacher. And that has changed the way people view the creature. In the UK, they're now seen as sentient beings under the law. Kevin Flannery, the director of Ocean World Aquarium in Dingle, says we have a dilemma on our hands in Ireland when it comes to octopuses. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm good, right?
Good to talk to you. You're on the road. Whereabouts in the country are you?
I'm up in Achill, up at the aquarium, up in Achill. I've started an aquarium up here, and I'm trying to convince them to take a few octopuses from us.
Right. You must have seen that documentary, My Octopus Teacher.
I did indeed.
Amazing documentary, isn't it?
We had interacted with them long before that. I mean, they're fabulous creatures to work with. As such, because when we put them into the tank many, many 25 years ago when we had them first, they began to walk out during the night and walk over into the other tanks and take a feed of fish that were in the other tanks. But we had to come up with a solution to stop them reaching out from the other tanks and stop taking the fish, and we have come up with that. In actual fact, we put artificial grass and artificial turf top of the tanks, and they don't like that, so they tend to stay in their tank.
So, did you always know they were bright octopuses?
Well, it was always said. I mean, there was some doctor, and I think he worked in Connemara, some German psychologist, and he had done a lot of work with them, and that they were able to go through mazes, they were able to come, they'd hear a bell, they'd come up for their food, all that kind of stuff. That their intelligence had been worked on for years, but the big issue is that they don't survive that long. I mean, once the male is finished mating, he dies off, and once the eggs hatch out, she dies. So their lifespan for an intelligent creature is very, very short.
Right.
I mean, the maximum we had one here was about 24 months. After that, they tend to die off very rapidly.
Now, we would have had octopuses in our waters, but they were small.
Yeah.
They still are. We still have them. They're small, yeah.
We still have them. Yeah. There's plenty of them here, and the fishermen have been catching them, but we don't eat them, and we didn't eat them. They're quite small. But anybody that's been to Spain or the Mediterranean would have seen these big tentacles for sale and octopus for sale, and even some of the German supermarkets are now bringing them into Ireland and selling them. And these are the species that have moved into our waters. They're called the common octopus, Octopus vulgaris, but they're quite large. I mean, you'd know the tentacles. They can grow up to about 20-pound weight. And the difference with these guys is they have two sets of suckers, and their mantle, when they spread themselves out, they'd be over a meter, well over a meter wide.
So tentacle, so tip of tentacle to tip of tentacle.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah, they'd be a meter. Okay, yeah.
At least a meter. They can. Yeah. I've seen them possibly get bigger, but maybe I was imagining in the tank, but they are quite big. And fishermen had assumed that they were smothering the lobster, because, I mean, if you've two sets of tentacles on eight and two sets of suckers on eight tentacles, they can hold down their prey very, very tight. But what they're actually doing is they have the same beak, the mouth is the same as a parrot's beak, and they tend to bite, and the saliva they have has a venom, and it anesthetizes the prey, the lobster or the crab or the crayfish, and then they can devour it according to what they choose at their own time.
Okay. Now, there's been loads of sightings, and you're calling them an invasive species now.
An alien invasive species. Yeah, because
go on.
They're not native.
Yes, and they're messing with our lobster pots.
Very much so. I mean, we got four down off of between Skull, Baltimore. I've got them up as far as the Blaskets. We've got them in Kenmare. And in the last week, I picked up two, one from Union Hall and one from Skull again. And they are inside. How the fishermen get them is that their lobsters are dead inside in the pot that they're fishing. These guys stay in there. And right. Now they can't escape out because they'll go out through the pot very easily. But when the fisherman hauled up his pot, he had one of these big guys in it. And it was the same in Union Hall as in Skull. So they have moved in here, Ray, because they're not a migratory species as such. They don't come. We get a lot of different migratory species. Like we had flying fish, we get triggerfish.
Yeah, and we've had John over the years where there'd be the odd sighting of something and it'd make the papers and we'd have you on, we'd have a chat about it. And that happens. But this is different.
This is different because I think they're very slow moving. They have moved up slowly up the Bay of Biscay, up the west coast of France in the Channel and moved in here, and they're possibly breeding here. And if they're breeding here, then the lobster stock and the crayfish and the crab will have consequences for the fishermen.
They can't believe their luck. It's like a restaurant for them. They rock up to a lobster pot and they're all there caught for them. They don't have to do any of the hard work. Feast themselves and move on to the next one. So how do they get around that down in Spain where they're native?
In Spain, they take them in and eat them because they use about 20,000 tons of them a year. They're called pulpo. If you're ever in pulpo,
yeah, no, I've had octopus, in Spain. So, just as a bit of a tangent, is this because of global warming? Is this because the seas around Ireland are getting warmer? Yeah,
without a doubt, I don't think so. Yeah, there is nothing. Okay, absolutely. So, I mean, we had water temperatures last week off the coast of England up to 19 degrees, which is absolutely crazy. But that's what's happening, and obviously we're going to get species like it. But the worrying fact is that these guys have moved in here and for the lobster fishermen. So we have a dilemma. Do you take them, kill them and sell them off, or do we remove them, or do we know how many is there? Because obviously they will do damage to the lobster stock and to the fishermen. So therefore, because they're an intelligent creature, we've been taking them in and allowing them to survive in the aquarium as such. But if there's a large volume of them, we've got to find out. Now, the difference between...
How do you do an audit on the number of...
Well, you see, if the Marine Institute or BIM or somebody gets the type of pots from... or that the fishermen know exactly what this octopus is, because they have two sets of suckers on each tentacle.
Yes.
Our ones have only one.
Yes, so
the fishermen now are able to distinguish the difference in that. And also they're kind of warty. They have a tendency to put up different camouflage. So it would be brilliant if the fishermen recognise them. They're not ordinary octopus. They are.
Okay, and we wouldn't, if you were swimming in the sea, you wouldn't encounter one, would you? Not to
you
scare anybody.
In crevices and those places.
Right.
Much like the guy did with the one in South Africa.
Yes, he befriended it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we leave them well enough alone. So anyway, in the short to medium term, you need to do something about it. What about making the lobster pots more secure?
You can't, right? Because these guys are capable of going out through the eye of a needle. They can make themselves extremely small and go out through it. And you have to allow for small lobsters to escape out through the meshes. So therefore, you can't do that. They put dead eyes in them to prevent spider crab and that kind coming in because the spider crab would foul up. But you can't prevent the octopus from going in virtually. So there is a need, we'll say, to establish how many are there. Or maybe I'm totally wrong that maybe they do migrate and head away down to Spain again for the winter, but it's unlikely because they're not that type of species.
Yes.
They're the type of species that just barely move along the bottom and ambush predate at night.
19 degrees, huh? Of course, this is when the seawater is at its hottest, isn't it? It's the warmest. Yeah, because it's gathered up the heat throughout the summer. And the weather hasn't turned nasty enough yet to cool it down. But this is just one symptom of global warming, isn't it?
Without a doubt, we'll get more. I mean, the tuna and the are moved all the way up off of the west coast. The Spanish are fitting west. You could say southwest off of the Blaskets. We've had flying fish this year. We've had trigger fish. You're getting all these tropical warm water species moving in. So this is a consequence of global warming, and there's no doubt. And its effect on the fishing industry would be quite dramatic because obviously the cod, we've seen the cod in aquariums, and if it goes over 17 degrees, they're dead. They just die. There's no oxygen in the water. And so they moved up further north. Our herring and mackerel, the possibility doing the same. So
yes, I heard mackerel stock was low this summer. Where did I hear that? I can't remember where I heard it.
usually around this time of the year, they what they call the autumn mackerel fishery. They'll come up because they have spawned out of Spain and they'll be moving into the bays, heavily right. feeding now for the winter. So okay. you'll get plenty of them now for September and October.
Okay. It's always good talking to you, Kevin. We'll keep an eye on the number of octopus eye, and if there's any audit of them that you think we should know about, do let us know. Mind yourself, Kevin.
All right, great.
See you now. Bye. Kevin Flannery there, Director of Ocean World Aquarium in Dingle. We have another commercial break to take before note.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anish Darcy now, the Preve Skelton and Oakdale and Maura de Wallace. Now, 5155 on RayRTE.ie. A lot of people want to know the name of the piece of music we played at the top of the programme. That's by a guy called Ludovico Einaudi. He's an Italian pianist, and a lot of his stuff is used in documentaries, and he's an amazing pianist. He's been to the National Concert Hall a number of times. Anyway, that particular piece is Nuvole Bianche, and I'll spell it for you. N-U-V-O-L-E, N-U-V-O-L-E, B-I-A-N-C-H-E. And what was the name of that Passengers song? Was number one, Never Let Her Go or something like that. Anyway, you'll hear the similarities between the two of them when you listen to it. We've two people waiting to answer three questions each on clips. We call it Reeling in the Ears, and this week's prize, great prize, two nights stay for our winner to the Crow Park Hotel, and they're celebrating the renovation and refurbishment of its ground floor. It's a Doyle Collection Hotel, now has a luxurious new lobby, bar, restaurant and terrace in the heart of Dublin City for you and a guest to enjoy with breakfast and dinner included. The modern and atmospheric Hawthorne restaurant provides an elevated dining experience in a relaxed yet glamorous setting that champions local produce, just 15 minutes away from the centre of Dublin City. You can find out more doylecollection.com/hotels/Crow Park Hotel. And on the line we have Joan Byrne. How are you doing, Joan?
I'm grand, thanks Ray, how are you?
Yeah, good to talk to you. You're out in Ballymun.
Yeah.
do you know Austin Toohey at all? No.
Do I know who?
Austin Toohey, no.
No, I don't. Who's that?
No, because he works in the same area as you work, and just by coincidence, there would have been a half marathon started in Ballymun on Saturday morning called the Recovery right. Run. And Austin yeah. organised that. And
oh, yeah, of course, I know the Recovery Run. Yes.
So he's the man who organised that. He works for the HSE. Ah, so there you go.
Fair enough.
I hope they did well on Saturday, because it was a dirty old day, wasn't it?
It was horrible. Absolutely.
To be running across the city. Yeah. So you were in work today, but you're at home now.
I am.
Yeah. And I'm just looking. So you're working a drug project. You can't really work from home, can you?
Well, it's not a drug project as such. I work for an organisation that supports community responding to the drugs crisis.
Right.
So we've more of a national remit.
Aha.
So, you know, we'd support those projects. I used to work in a drugs project directly, but, you know, that's what I do now. So it's kind of a policy level work and right. support work.
Okay. Yeah. That's emotionally draining, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. Can be, yeah. Particularly when things are very difficult in all yeah. communities at the moment.
They are, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you switch off?
ringing in radio quizzes. I know, I'm joking. you kind of learn that you kind of have to go home and chill and relax. But you kind of, there's one level you do that, and the other level if you don't. Really switch off. If you have a passion and you're yes. doing it for that reason, it becomes your life as opposed to a piece of work, you know. So you live with it, and also I live with it in my own area, as you can
yes.
imagine. So
yeah, yeah.
You know it's hard to switch off.
Yeah, but you have to mind yourself, because if you don't, you'd be no yeah. good to the people you help.
Yeah.
Isn't that it as well?
I have
yeah.
lovely grandchildren, and right. I mind them too a lot, and that helps me, you know, chilling with them and bringing them and watching silly films with them.
That's so brilliant, so therapeutic.
Yeah.
They don't realise what, you know, the good they're doing for you, I would imagine.
Absolutely, and I'd never tell them, because I'd owe them a fortune.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the therapy. Yeah. Granny said,
now
thanks for the therapy. What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah. Now go home.
Yeah, now go home, yeah. Right, you're up against Emer Lawless in County Dublin. How are you doing, Emer?
Hi, Ray, how are you?
You're back, just back from Marbella.
Well, close enough. We're not rich enough to stay in Marbella.
Oh, right.
We're near enough to Marbella.
Out the road.
Up the road.
Up the road.
The poorer part.
Right, okay. You're not going to name it, so we won't. But Marbella is a bit too busy for my liking. Like, we used to stay up the road as well when we went over Elviria, just up back the road.
We were staying in a residential area and it was about 30 metres from the beach, so it was quite chilled. We used to like get the bus into Marbella.
Yeah,
it was lovely
when you wanted. Yeah,
great,
yeah.
To get away when we wanted. Yeah, but it was nice and mellow.
Yeah, great. And who was there with you?
I was there with my husband John and my kids Sophie, Jack, and Grace, and my mother-in-law Antoinette.
Right. So I'm just seeing you've is it the 12-year-old starting secondary school?
She started last week.
Yes. So, how is first year going for her?
Yeah, it's going okay. Like, you know yourself, it takes a bit to kind of settle in, but another few weeks should be grand.
Right.
I'm happy anyway, because they're out of the house. I work from home, so two of them are out of the house anyway, so that makes my job a little bit easier.
So that's a sort of, a milestone of many milestones, in that they're all out of primary school now for the first time.
I know, that's it.
Goes very quickly, doesn't it?
too quickly, but the eldest is starting college in a couple of weeks, so I suppose you just don't see the years fly by.
Yeah, no, you don't. So we have to try and live in the moment, don't we? And
that's it.
Enjoy them while they're with us. Okay, so you know the deal by now. It's three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever gets the most on points is the winner. And if it's a draw, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both, Joan and Emer, both in Dublin. Okay, here we go. Okay, Joan, the year is 1994. 1994, and we're starting on the television.
Okay.
So, do you want to go long or short?
I'll go long.
Long, okay. This drama starring Claire Danes and Jared Leto had its debut in 1994. It followed the trials and tribulations of being a teenager while dealing with friends, guys, parents and school. Can you name it? Here is your long clip.
So are we supposed to say something? Like official? Because
you don't have to say anything.
It's sort of like when you were letting me drive your car. And I loved it. It made me feel really powerful. But also really terrified. Like I wasn't ready for that much freedom.
Right. Any ideas?
Yeah, I'm going to say I haven't a clue, but I'm just going to hit Beverly Hills 90210. I don't know.
No, it was my so-called Life, which didn't hit my radar either. It only lasts for one season, although people say it was one of the best teen dramas of all time.
Yeah, I've never even heard of it.
No, there you go. Okay, early days. Emer, so 1994, the television, a chance for you to go in front. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
I'd go for a long clip. Please.
Long clip, okay. This highly acclaimed medical drama starring George Clooney and Anthony Edwards first hit the small screen in 1994. Believe it or not, here's your long clip.
Dr. Green. Mark.
What is it?
Can I give Mrs. Williston more Demerol? She's complaining of pain.
50 milligrams, I am.
Thanks, Mark. Dr. Green.
What is it?
6:30, Dr. Green.
Well,
is it Eeyore?
It is Eeyore, yes it is. And it did 331 episodes and you get 1 point, which puts you in a narrow lead. Back to you, Joan. Second question is on music from 1994. What do you think?
I'll go for a long clip.
Are you sure? Yeah. Okay, right.
This
indie tune was a big hit for this band in 1994. Can you name the song or the group? Here's your long clip.
That's Park Life by Blur.
Yes, you're kicking yourself. You didn't go for a short one.
I know,
a point.
Straight away.
Yes, Emer. Music for you.
I'll go for short.
Oh, look at you. Strategy. Short one. This song was a worldwide hit for this band in 1994. Again, the name of the song or the name of the band? Short clip.
In your head, in your head.
Oh. Dolores from. The Clambreys.
Yes. Oh, look at that, the way the brain works. yes, Dolores O'Riordan, their unmistakable voice, The Cranberries, and that was Zombie, and you get 2 points for that. Now, that makes it interesting here. Joan, you have to go short.
I have to go
short. You have to go short. Joan, go short. Yes. And
you can pack those mugs up with you, by the way. Have them ready.
Right, no, it's not over till it's over. Okay, news and current affairs. So you're going short. This popular American country singer kicked off 8 nights in the Point Theatre in March of 1994. Here's your short clip.
He was surprised at his popularity in Ireland.
Oh, yeah, extremely. I mean, I'm extremely surprised at this.
8 nights in the Point Theatre in 1994. Country
was
singer.
That Garth Brooks?
It was Garth Brooks. He didn't sound like Garth Brooks, but it was Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
And you get 2 points. Nothing more you can do. You're on three. Emer, you're on three. If you get anything from this last question, you're today's winner. And we will be packing up the mugs for Joan. Okay, so it's news and current affairs. What do you want to do, long or short?
I'd go for a long.
Yes, that would be the good thing to do, I think. In 1994, Aer Lingus introduced the first direct commercial service from Dublin Airport to where? And here's your long clip by way of a clue.
There was a carnival atmosphere at Dublin Airport. Dublin Direct was a big hit with the passengers.
Well, I make history, I suppose. You'd always knew I'd make history.
And it's very nice to think that we won't have to stop the Shannon because it makes life that bit easier.
The more direct, the better when you're travelling.
Okay. The first direct commercial service from Dublin Airport to where?
San Francisco?
No.
Having a clue.
New York.
New York.
Yes, because they had to stop in Shannon up until then.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes,
well.
And there was a mention there, it was hidden there in that clip there. Shannon was mentioned. Okay, so we're there you go, 3-3. It's, yeah, as I said, it's not over till it's over, Joan and Emer. So it's down to the tiebreak question. So we asked you this question before you went on air. Whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. I'll repeat it now for our listeners. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Kinsale to Kilkenny? Kinsale to Kilkenny. Joan, your guess was?
5 hours, 30 minutes.
It's 173 kilometres. You say 5 hours, 30 minutes. And Emer, your guess?
I think I said 8 hours, 20 minutes.
Yes, you did. The correct answer is 9 hours and 15 minutes. So so there you go, Emer, you're today's winner. Joan!
Yay! I'm getting the mugs.
You're getting the mugs, whether you like
that's
it or not.
Wanted, yes. Ray. That's all you wanted, right?
They're actually lovely, desirable
Congratulations,
mugs.
Congratulations, Emer.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Joan. Thank you so
and you
much,
you
Ray.
Can't buy them in the shops. Great talking to you, Joan. I'm sure our paths will cross again. Thanks, Joan. Bye now.
Bye.
Emer, well done. You
Thank
are off
so
to
much.
Crow Park Hotel with a person of your choice. At a time of your choice. Enjoy that, and you can go to Doyle Collection Hotels to find out what's in store for you.
I'm delighted. Thanks so much, Ray.
Now, I'll
just
say that again because I got it wrong.
Yeah.
DoyleCollection.com. DoyleCollection.com to find out what's in store.
Brilliant.
For you. Okay.
Thank you
see
so
you now.
Much.
Bye. See you, Emer. Well done. Bye. Bye.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope, we haven't seen each other in such a long time.
No, but all the holidays and the comings and
yes,
goings.
Great to see you.
You too. You're looking well.
Oh, thank you. So are you.
Love your glasses.
Yes. I didn't tell them, but just before I started talking to Una and Brian, just about 10 past three or so, one arm fell off. That's what they're called, aren't they? The arm fell off my glasses. Which is bad news, but the good news is I managed to find the ridiculously small screw, so I'll be able to repair them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Make do and mend.
That's one of those silly things you get in crackers at Christmas, isn't it?
And every time I get them, I keep them and I say, no, I'm going to need these at some point. And of course, do you think I can ever lay my hands on them when I need them? Never.
I had a conversation over the weekend about things that they should put into Christmas crackers. And I know it's we shouldn't be talking about Christmas. But there's this thing, right? Because you know this with all the technology you use, that they've now gone to this USB-C.
Yeah.
Which means that the old USB thing is going to become redundant on certain bits of technology. There's a brilliant thing you can get that is an adapter. So it has USB on either side of it.
Yeah.
So you can stick your sort of USB to lightning in one side and your USB to something else into the other side and makes a new cable.
Oh, there you go.
Now, they're about €2.
Yeah.
They should put those in Christmas crackers.
I don't know what kind, of Christmas crackers you're buying at all. Toenail clippers, yes. Those little screwdrivers,
yes.
And some crappy little...
But they should, you know, bring it up to today with technology. That little thing, it's only $2.50. Put it
let's
in
there. Let's go to business, right? What? Open, set up a cracker company.
Yes. Cracker company. Practical crackers.
Stuff that people
Connor
will
and
use.
Maybe that's the idea. They're saying there might be something there, Connor. There's a big market for crackers. Now, pricewatch@rte.ie, pricewatch@rte.ie. I'm surprised we haven't got something similar to this before, because people will say, ah, yeah. So, dear Connor, I travelled to Nice on August 10th. Nice. And bought AirPods from the InMotion outlet in Terminal 2 in Dublin Airport. I was, however, somewhat surprised to find that electronic items were not covered by any reduction in duty and attracted VAT at the full rate of 23%. To my dismay, the right AirPod began to malfunction a few days later. I've tried on numerous occasions to contact the telephone number given on the InMotion website for their outlet. To further complicate matters, they say that they cannot accept returns by mail. Since the outlet is in Terminal 2, in the duty-free area, I have no way of returning the faulty items in person, unless I'm travelling.
I've often wondered that myself, yes. Actually. And when I got the mail, I was in a way kind of delighted, because I was like, yeah, what do you do in that scenario? Because you can't hold on to the thing until you're travelling again. Because the way we travel is you might travel once or twice during the summertime and then you mightn't travel again until the next summer, by which time you've either lost the product or the warranty has expired or whatever it might be. So there's a couple of things at play here. First, the listener was travelling from Dublin to Nice, right? So there was this expectation that you'd get a VAT discount. He had an expectation you'd get the VAT discount. You won't.
Right.
Because, of course, we're within the European Union. So there was no question of any kind of VAT reduction for a product, because it's the single market. So the shop that was selling him the AirPods was perfectly within their rights to say, well, no, like, it's just... Now, had he been travelling to the United States, he would have got the VAT off it, because that's where the duty-free shop
applies. So is there any advantage of buying technology in the airport?
Well, funnily enough, I mean, I've written about this in the past, and if you talk to the DAA, the Dublin Airport Authority, they will say, well, that you get a certain discount on the product compared to high street prices. Now, listeners have, and readers of the Irish Times have contacted me to say, well, hang on a second, I saw product X selling for €100 on the high street and €105 in the airport, and then sometimes it might be 95 in the airport and 100 on the high street. So, you know, the bottom line is probably not when it comes to travelling within the European
Union.
Which
is a pity, because the effect that an airport has on your brain when it comes to shopping.
Listen, and like I try and approach the airport like a ninja.
Disciplined,
you know,
yeah.
Like I try to be really disciplined. But my entire family, my wife and my older children, and to be honest, my 4.5-year-old, are just terrible. And it's almost like we've won the lotto.
Yeah.
As soon as we get into the airport, it's like, doesn't matter how much it costs, let's just buy everything. Like, the only thing they don't really buy is suitcases, because I'm always marvelling at how many suitcases they have for sale in the airport. Like, you've already come through security. You don't need a suitcase.
Yeah.
But anyway,
The
danger zones are the makeup departments, the cosmetics departments, and boots.
And technology. Because you buy things that you probably don't need, or you have left at home.
Yeah, because people, and to be honest, there's a science behind it, because it's not just my family. The airports, like supermarkets, spend tens if not hundreds of millions of euros worldwide every year trying to work out how to best design themselves to facilitate our spending experience,
right, okay.
Or to make us spend money. And so anyway, so
the first disappointment was that there was
no VAT back. So he spent £250 on the AirPods. Now, just for your listeners who aren't familiar with them, they're the little Apple earbuds.
Yes.
They slot into your ear. They come with a recharging case. £250 is a lot of money to spend on them. And then, of course, they broke. So what was he to do? Now, there's two things he could have done. First, you know, he did the right thing. You contact the retailer and you talk to the retailer and the retailer sorts it out. Okay, that's one thing. This was impossible, or he found it impossible in this instance to do that. He could have then gone directly to Apple, because you are legally entitled to deal directly with the manufacturer if you so choose.
Mm.
A retailer can't force you to deal directly with the manufacturer, but you have that right. So he could have contacted Apple directly and said, I bought this product, here's the receipt, they're faulty, what are you going to do to me? Going to do for me? And because it was within a very small window, he would have been entitled to one of the 3 hours, refund, repair or replacement, but 99.99 times out of 100, he'd get the replacement,
right,
from Apple. Because
it's
the product,
easier, it's quicker.
Well, and also, because it had broken within such a short time frame,
okay,
there's an assumption made in consumer law that the product was there The fault was there when you bought the product. Okay, but so he went to the shop. Now he couldn't get in. He couldn't get back to the shop because he wasn't going to be flying through Terminal 2 any time in the near future.
Why didn't he just rock up to security and go, "Excuse me, I've a faulty airport here. Just want to go in. I won't take me 5 minutes.
Sure, yeah, knock yourself out. Go on in. We don't." So anyway, I contacted the DAA because the DAA is, it doesn't run the shop, but it runs the airport, the Dublin Airport Authority. So it's
the loop.
All the shops would sell concessions in the shop. So I did get a kind of a fairly detailed statement from them. Now, In Motion was the shop, and they're a third party concession. They explained why the VAT reduction wasn't included. As a result of our intervention, the shop have subsequently made contact with our listener, and they're resolving the issues. He's been offered a full refund on the faulty item, which is great. Now, the difficulty here is the shop also told us that our listener had mistakenly contacted the US division of the shop rather than the UK division. So that's why they say he was running up against a brink wall, because of course the US division
.com instead of .co.uk,
and he just probably went to the wrong shop. And that's totally understandable when people are using the internet. It's an unfamiliar shop. They have a fairly unfamiliar or certainly not a common query, and they went to the US arm rather than the UK arm. And they also pointed out that the warranty period for this product is 12 months from the date of purchase, so he would have been, it would have fallen within the warranty. And then of course Apple also offer a 6 month guarantee on the products, which is why he's going to get a full refund, because the product broke within the 6 month period and Apple guarantee it for the full 6 months. Okay. So the good news is they've now been in touch with our listener's getting his full refund. He'll still have the broken pair of headphones that he'll have to deal with himself, because, you know.
And what have we learned from all of this?
We have learned
in general
there is a capacity. If you buy something in the airport, there is systems in place for you to get your refund.
Okay.
But you do need to do a little bit of homework to make sure that you're making contact with the right people rather than just kind of firing off emails.
Now, you have been saying on this programme and others for years about changing your energy supplier and shopping around, the refrain of Mary Harney. And you were on The Late Late Show on Friday night.
I was.
Sharing that with a different audience.
That's right.
Doughy O'Shea was sitting down at home with Rita, and he took note and acted on your advice.
And he did. He saved himself 500 quid.
500 quid.
Yeah.
450.
450,
Yeah. So that must be pleasing enough.
It is, but the thing is, as you say, it's a different audience. But we've been saying it on this show and on other incarnations of this show for a long time. We've been saying it in the Irish Times for a long time, that there are savings on the table for you if you move from company A to company B. And one of the reasons why I wanted to start with that, I had a whole raft of tips that I thought I might get through, but live TV, you understand yourself, that's not how it happens sometimes. But, you know, it's the single easiest way that a person can save money. And despite that, there is at least 500,000 people who... about 500,000 people. Yeah. 500,000 people who have never switched energy provider. And the savings are on the table for every single one of those 500,000 people. And they're on the table now, because if you move from company A to company B, you will be offered an introductory discount that can be up to 40%. Now, in Dahi's case, he got a 25% discount, which means that he's going to save 450 euros on his annual energy bills in 2022. I made the switch myself in March, and I managed to knock well over 1,000 euros off my annual charges because of the company I was with.
Because there are incentives to new customers.
And the incentive only lasts 12 months. So we really need to be incredibly proactive and move every 12 months. Almost set your alarm for it. So once the 12-month period ends, you go from company A to company B.
I read one of your pieces over the weekend and I was incensed.
Oh, great.
And angry.
Oh, no.
And maybe I read it wrongly, but there are certain energy providers who are making an awful lot of profit at the moment because of the way the system works and the European laws around it.
Absolutely. No, it is incredibly infuriating, because the way that the EU-wide energy system was set up was the price of all fuel sources was linked to the price of gas. Now, the reason why they did that was they wanted to make sure that people who were generating renewable energies like wind,
were incentivized
to do it. So they could always be guaranteed a benchmark price, which was linked to gas. And in a normal market, when the gas market is functioning as it normally does, that's fine. But in the completely dysfunctional market we have now, whereby the Russians have turned off the gas pipelines into Europe, gas prices have increased by 1,000%, sometimes even 12 times the actual value. That has an irrational and unnatural impact on the price of renewables as well. And that means that the companies who are producing renewables, wind and solar, they haven't seen any cost increases themselves. But they are selling their product at a higher price now because gas prices and renewable prices are linked. So what the European Union is doing this week is they're going to look at ways to decouple, and that's the word they were using, decouple the price of natural gas and the price of renewables. Now, the irritating thing is, this time last year, the Spanish government called on the EU to do this very thing.
Knowing that this was...
Well, they didn't know that Russia was about to invade Ukraine, well, but they knew that gas prices were climbing as a result of the post-COVID economic bounce and as a result of other factors that were coming into play.
And they were ignored.
And they were ignored, and they were ignored by every government, or most governments within the European Union, including our own. So it means that we're now playing, the EU-wide, are playing catch-up and trying to create a different market that will both incentivise renewables, but not in... unavoidably link gas prices with renewable prices, which means that everybody ends up paying far too much for their product.
And does it mean that those some renewable companies have been enjoying extra large profits?
Well, I mean, to put it this way, there's a company, Bord Gáis Energy is owned by a company called Centrica, in a big UK-based company. Their profits are close to €1 billion in 2022. Right. And Bord Gáis Energy's element of that profit has more than doubled to close to €90 million. And that seems unfair.
It does seem unfair. Pricewatch at rte.ie if you want to contact Connor, and he will grapple with your consumer issues. Connor, great to see you. Thanks very much. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.